The next day, she and Evan rose early and spent the morning humouring a sick, querulous old man in his lonely forest hut. Barry, who had been up and playing at first light, tagged along after them, since her father was still asleep. She had better luck than either of them in bringing a smile to the old man's thin lips. Maris was glad. She herself was depressed and out of sorts, and the ancient's whining complaints only made her more irritable. She had to suppress the urge to snap at him. "You'd think he was dying the way he carried on," Maris said as they started the walk back home. Little Barry looked at her strangely. "He is," she said in a small voice. She looked at Evan for support. The healer nodded. "The child's right," he said grumpily. "The signs are clear enough, Maris. Haven't you listened to anything I've taught you? Barry is more attentive than you've been of late. I doubt that it'll last 3 months. Why do you think I made him the tessus?"
"Signs?"
Maris felt confused and embarrassed. She could memorize the things Evan told her easily enough, but applying the knowledge was so much harder. "He was complaining about aches in his bones," she said. "I thought he was old, after all, and old people often..." Evan made an impatient noise. "Barry," he said, "how did you know he was dying?"
"I felt in his elbows and knees like you showed me," she said eagerly, proud of the things she'd learned from Evan. "They were lumpy, getting hard. Under his chin, too, behind the whiskers. And his skin felt cold. Did he have the puff?"
"The puff?" Evan said, pleased. "Children often recover from it, but not adults. Never."
I didn't notice," Maris said.
"No," Evan said, "you didn't."
They walked on in silence, Barry skipping along happily, Maris feeling inordinately tired.
There was the faintest breath of spring in the air. Maris felt her spirits lift as she walked through the clean dawn air with Evan. The landsman's grim keep waited at the end of the journey, but the sun was out, the air was fresh, and the breeze felt almost caressing through the cloak she wore. Red, blue, and yellow flowers gleamed like jewels amid the grey-green moss and dark humus alongside the road. Birds, like quick glimpses of flame or sky, flew through the trees and sang. It was a day when being alive and moving was a pleasure in itself. Beside her, Evan was silent. Maris knew he was puzzling over the message that had brought them out. They'd been awakened before it was light by a pounding at the door. One of the landsman's runners, out of breath, had blurted out the need for a healer at the keep. He could say no more, knew no more, just that someone was injured and needed aid. Evan, warm and bemused from bed, his white hair standing up like a bird's ruffled feathers, was not eager to go anywhere. "Everyone knows the landsman keeps his own healer by him, for his family and servants," he objected. "Why can't he deal with this emergency?" The runner, who obviously knew no more than he had been told, looked confused.
"The healer, Rennie, has lately been confined for treason, suspected treason," he said in his soft, breathless voice.
Evan swore.
"Treason? That's madness. Rennie would not..." "Oh, very well. Stop chewing your lip, boy. We'll come, my assistant and I, and see about this injury."
All too soon they reached the narrow valley and saw the landsman's massive stone keep looming ahead of them. Maris pulled her cloak, which she had worn loosely open, more tightly around her. The air was colder here. Spring had not ventured past the mountain wall. There were no flowers or bright tendrils of ivy to relieve the dull-coloured rock and lichen, and the only birds that sounded were the harsh-voiced scavenger gulls. An elderly, scar-faced landsguard with a knife in her belt and a bow strapped to her back met them before they had advanced more than a few feet into the valley. She questioned them closely, searched them, and took charge of Evans's surgical kit before escorting them past two checkpoints and through the gate into the keep. Maris noticed
that there were even more Landsguard patrolling the high, wide walls than on her last visit, and saw a new fierceness, a repressed excitement, in the drilling troops within the courtyard. The landsman met them in an outer hall, alone except for his omnipresent guards 5 steps behind him. His face darkened when he saw Maris, and he addressed Evan harshly.
"I sent for you, healer, and not for this wingless flyer."
"Maris is my assistant now," Evan said calmly. "As you yourself should know very well, she is not a flyer."
"Once a flyer, always a flyer," growled the landsman. "She has flyer friends, and we do not need her here. The security, she is a healer's apprentice," Evan said, interrupting. "I vouch for her. The code that binds me will also bind her. We will not gossip of anything we learn here."
The landsman still frowned. Maris was rigid with fury. How could he speak of her like that, ignoring her as if she were not even present? Finally, the landsman said grudgingly,
"I do not trust this apprenticeship, but I will take your word on her behalf, healer. But bear in mind, if she should carry tales of what she sees here today, both of you will hang."
"We made haste to get here," Evan said coldly, "but I judge by your manner that there is no cause for hurry." The landsman turned aside without replying, and sent for another brace of landsguard. Then, without a backward glance, he left them. The landsguard, both young and heavily armed, escorted Evan and Maris down steep stone steps into a tunnel carved out of the solid rock of the mountain, far below the living quarters of the fortress. Tapers burned smokily on the walls at wide intervals, providing a shifting, uncertain light. The air in the narrow, low-ceiling tunnel smelled of mould and of acrid smoke. Maris felt a sudden wave of claustrophobia and clutched Evan's hand. At last they came to a branching corridor, set with heavy wooden doors. At one of these doors they stopped, and the guards removed the heavy bars that locked it. Inside was a small stone cell with a rough pallet on the floor and one high round window. Leaning against the wall was a young woman with long pale blonde hair. Her lips were swollen, one eye blackened, and there were bloodstains on her clothes. It took Maris a few moments to recognize her.
"Tia?" she said, wondering.
The landsguard left them, bolting the door behind them, with the assurance they would be right outside if anything was needed. While Maris still stared, uncomprehending, Evan went to Tia's side.
"What happened?" he asked.
"The landsman's bullies were none too gentle about arresting me," Tia said, in her cool, ironic voice. She might have been speaking about someone else. "Or maybe it was my mistake to fight them."
"Where are you hurt?" Evan asked.
Tia grimaced.
"From the feel of it, they broke my collarbone and chipped a tooth. That's all. Just bruises otherwise. All that blood came from my lips."
"Maris, my kit," said Evan.
Maris carried it to his side. She looked at Tia. How could he arrest a flyer? Why?
"The charge is treason," Tia said.
Then she gasped as Evan's fingers probed around her neck.
"Sit," said Evan, helping her down. "It will be better."
"He must be mad," Maris said. The word called up the ghost of the mad landsman of Kennehut. In grief, hearing of his son's death in a far-off land, he had murdered the messenger who flew the unwelcome news. The flyers had shunned him afterward, until proud, rich Kennehut became a desolation, ruined and empty, its very name a synonym for madness and despair. No landsman since would dream of harming a flyer. Until now. Maris shook her head, gazing at Tia but not really seeing her. Has he lost his reason so far as to imagine that the messages you carry from his enemies come from your own heart? To call it treason is wrong in itself. The man must be mad. You aren't subject to him. He knows that flyers are above petty local laws. As his equal, how could you do anything treasonous? What does he say you did? Oh, he knows what I did, Tia said. I don't claim I was arrested on false pretenses. I simply didn't expect him to find out. I'm still not sure how he knew, when I thought I'd been so careful. She winced. But now it's all for nothing. There will be war, just as fierce and bloody as if I'd stayed out of it.
I don't understand. Tia grinned at her. Her black eyes were still sharp and aware, despite her bruises and her obvious pain.
No. I have heard that some old-time flyers could carry messages without knowing what they said, but I always knew. Each belligerent threat, each tempting promise, each potential alliance for war. I learned things I had no intention of saying.
I changed the messages. Slightly at first, making them a little more diplomatic, and returned with responses that would delay or sidestep the war he was after. It was working, until he found out about my deception.
All right, Tia, Evan said. No more talking just now. I'm going to set your collarbone, and it will hurt. Can you hold still, or do you want Maris to help hold you down?
I'll be good, healer, Tia said. She took a deep breath. Maris stared blankly at Tia, hardly believing what she'd just heard. Tia had done the unthinkable. She had altered a message entrusted to her. She had meddled in land-bound politics instead of staying above them as a flyer always did. The mad act of jailing a flyer no longer seemed so mad. What else could the landsman have done? No wonder he'd been so disturbed by Maris's presence. When word reached other flyers...
"What does the landsman plan to do with you?" Maris asked.
For the first time, Tia looked somber. "The usual punishment for treason is death."
"He wouldn't dare, I wonder.
I was afraid that he planned to bury me here, kill me secretly, and silence the landsguard who had arrested me. Then I would simply vanish and be presumed lost at sea. But now that you've been here, Maris, I don't think he can. You would denounce him."
"And then we would both hang as treasonous liars," said Evan. His tone was light. More seriously, he added, "No, I think you're right, Tia. The landsman would not have sent for me if he meant to kill you in secret. Much easier just to let you die. The more people who know of your arrest, the greater the danger to himself."
"There's flyer's law. The landsman has no right to judge a flyer," Maris said. "He'll simply have to turn you over to the flyers. A court will be called, and you'll be stripped of your wings."
"Oh, Tia, I never heard of a flyer doing such a thing."
"I've shocked you, Maris, haven't I?" Tia smiled. "You can't see beyond the horror of breaking tradition. Not even you. I told you you were no one wing."
"Do you think it makes a difference?" Maris asked quietly. "Do you expect that the one wings will flock to your side and applaud this crime? That somehow you'll be allowed to keep your wings? What landsman would have you?"
"The landsmen won't like it," Tia said. "But perhaps it's time for them to learn they can't control us. I have friends among the One Wings who agree with me. The landsmen have too much power, particularly here in Easton."
"And by what right?"
"By birth. Birth used to determine who wore wings, but your council changed that. Why should it determine who rules?"
"You don't realize the things a landsman can do, Maris. It's different in Weston. And you were above it all, like all the old flyers. But it is different for a one-wing. We grow up like all the other land-bound, nothing special about us. And after we win our wings, the landsmen still see us as subjects. The wings we bear command their respect for us as their equals, but it's a fragile thing, that respect. At any competition, we might lose the wings and again be weak, lowly citizens. In Easton, in the Embers, in most of Southern, and even a few islands in Weston, wherever the landsmen inherit their power, they look with respect upon the flyers who were born to wings. They may disguise it, but they feel a sort of contempt for those of us who had to work and struggle to win a pair of wings. They treat us only superficially as their equals. All the time they're trying to control us, trying to buy and sell us,
commanding us, feeding us messages to fly as if we were no more than a flock of trained birds. Well, what I've done will shake them, make them look again. We're not their servants, and we won't submit any more to flying messages we despise, carrying death warrants and ultimatums to ignite wars that might destroy our families, friends, and other innocents. You can't pick and choose like that, Maris interrupted. You can't. The messenger isn't responsible for the content of the message. That's what the flyers told themselves for centuries, Tia said. Her eyes glittered with anger. But of course the messenger is responsible. I have brains, a heart, a conscience. I won't pretend I don't. Abruptly, like a sluice of cold water, the thought, this has nothing to do with me, doused Maris's passion. She was left feeling angry and bitter. What was she doing arguing flyer business? She was no flyer. She looked at Evan. If you're through here, we'd better leave, she said dully. He rested a hand on her shoulder and nodded to her, then looked at Tia. It's only a minor fracture, he said. There should be no problem with its healing. Just rest. Don't do anything violent that might dislodge the brace. Tia grinned crookedly, showing her discolored teeth. Like trying to escape? I have no activities planned, but you better tell the landsman, so his guards don't forget themselves and massage me with their clubs. Evan knocked on the door for the guards, and almost immediately came the noise of the heavy bolts being drawn back. Goodbye, Maris, Tia called. Maris hesitated, about to walk through the door. Then she turned back. I don't think the landsman will dare to try you himself, she said earnestly. You'll have to let your peers judge you. But I don't think they will be kind, Tia. What you have done is too dangerous. It affects too many people. It affects everyone. Tia stared at her. So is what you did, Maris. But the world is ready for another change, I think. I know what I did was right, even if I failed. Maybe the world is ready for another change, Maris said steadily. But is this the way we should change it? You've only replaced threats with lies. Do you really think flyers as a whole are wiser and more noble than landsmen, that they should bear the whole responsibility for choosing what messages to fly, and which to alter, and which to refuse? Tia looked back at her, unmoved. I'd do it again, she said. The trip through the tunnel seemed shorter on their return. The landsman was again waiting for them in the draughty outer hall, and he looked at them both sharply, as if seeking signs of anger or fear. A most unfortunate accident, he said. Evan said, She suffered only a fractured collarbone and a few bruises. She should recover quickly if she's given good food and allowed to rest. She will have the best of care during her detention here, said the landsman. He looked at Maris, although he directed his words to Evan. I've sent Jem to spread word of her arrest. A thankless task. The flyers have no leaders, no rational organization. That would make things too easy. Instead, word must be spread among as many of them as possible, and that takes time. But it will be done. Jem has flown for me for many years, and his mother flew for my father. He, at least, I can count on.
Then you intend to hand Tia over to the flyers for trial, said Maris.
The landsman's mouth twitched spasmodically. He looked at Evan, making an elaborate charade of ignoring Maris.
It occurred to me that the flyers might wish to send someone to represent their viewpoint, to formally condemn Tia's actions, to plead for mercy, to present any mitigating factors. But the crime was committed against me, against Theos. And only the landsman of Theos can hold trial and mete out punishment in such a case. You agree?
I know nothing of the law nor of what landsmen must do, Evan said quietly. The ways of healing are what I know.
Maris felt the warning pressure of Evan's hand on her arm and said nothing. It was a hard silence. For years she'd always said what she thought. The landsman smiled at Evan. It was a gloating, unpleasant expression.
Perhaps you'd like to learn. You and your assistant are welcome to stay and sup with me, and afterward I can promise you a most edifying entertainment. A traitor, Renny the Healer, is to be hanged at sunset.
For what crime?
Treason, as I said. This Renny had family on Frayn, and he was often seen in the company of the traitorous Flyer, was known, in fact, to cohabit with her. He was her accomplice. Won't you stay and observe the fate of those who betray me?
Maris felt sick.
I think not, said Evan. Now, if you will excuse us, we must be on our way.
Evan and Maris did not speak again until the Landsguard had left them at the mouth of the valley and they were on the road toward home, presumably safely away from unfriendly ears.
Poor Renny, Evan said then.
Poor Tia, said Maris. He means to hang her, too.
Oh, what she did was wrong, no doubt, but what a fate!
I don't know what the Flyers will do, but they can't tolerate this. A Flyer can't be tried and executed by a landsman.
It may not happen, Evan said.
Poor Renny will die, no doubt, but that may be enough to appease the landsman. He's a man who must have blood, but he's not totally mad. He surely realizes that he'll have to give Tia over to the Flyers eventually, that her punishment must come from them.
Whatever happens to Tia is none of my business anyway, Maris said with a sigh. It's a hard habit to break after more than 40 years of thinking of myself as a Flyer, but I'm a landbound now like any other, and what happens to Tia shouldn't mean anything to me.
Evan put his arm around her and hugged her close as they walked. Maris, no one expects you to forget your life as a Flyer, or to stop feeling those ties.
I know, said Maris. No one except me.
But it's no good, Evan. I have to. I don't know how else to go on. When I was younger, I thought the story of Woodwings was romantic. I thought that dreams were the most important things of all, and that if you wanted something strongly and surely enough, you would eventually have it, even if it meant dying to attain it. It never occurred to me to wonder what might have happened to Woodwings if he'd been rescued from the ocean, if his legendary fall had not killed him, if he'd been picked up floating on those ridiculous wooden wings of his and given back to his land-bound friends, how he would have lived with a failure, with his dreams shattered, what compromises he would have made. She sighed and rested her head on Evan's shoulder.
I've had a long life as a Flyer. Longer than many, I should be content. I wish I could be. In some ways, I'm still a child, Evan. I never learned how to deal with disappointment. I thought there was always a way to get what I wanted without giving up or compromising.
It's hard, Evan.
Growth can be painful, Evan said, and healing takes time.
Give it time, Maris.
Cole and Barry were gone. They planned to tour Theos one last time before taking ship to other eastern islands. They would come back before very long, Cole assured Maris and Evan, but Maris suspected that one thing would lead to another, and that it would be a matter of years rather than months before she saw either Cole or his daughter again. In fact, it was only a matter of days.
Cole was raging. "Permission of the landsman is required to leave this godforsaken rock," he said in response to Maris's surprised greeting. He was almost shouting, "A time of crisis, when singers might be spies!"
Barry peeked shyly around her father's bulk, then rushed forward to hug first Maris and then Evan.
"I'm glad we came back," she murmured.
"Has war with Frayn been declared, then?" asked Evan. Despite the quick flash of a smile for Barry, his face was grim.
Cole threw himself into the large chair near the fireplace.
"I don't know if it's called war yet or not," he said. "But the story abroad in the streets was that the landsman had just sent 3 warships crammed with landsguards to wrest control of that iron mine."
He fiddled with his guitar as he spoke, his restless fingers striking soft discords.
"While we wait for the outcome of this little venture, no one is to land on or leave Theos without the landsman's express personal permission. The traders are furious, but afraid to protest."
Cole scowled.
"Wait until I'm decently away from here. I'll make a lyric that will blister the landsman's ears when it gets back to him. And it will. It will.
Maris laughed.
Now you sound like Barion. He always said you singers were the ones who really ruled.
That finally drew a smile from Cole, but Evan remained grim.
No song will heal the wounded or bring the dead back to life, he said. If war is at hand, we must leave the forest for Port Theos. That is where they will bring the wounded, those that survive the crossing. I'll be needed there.
The streets are mad just now, said Cole. Rumors and wild stories of all sorts. The town has an ugly feel to it. The landsman has hanged his healer, and people are afraid to go to the keep. There will be trouble soon, and not just with Thrain.
His eyes found Maris.
Something is going on with the flyers as well. I must have counted a dozen pair of wings coming and going over the street. War messages, I assumed, but I drank with a tanner in the Scylla's Head who said more. She has a sister in the Landsguard, she told me, and she said her sister bragged of arresting a flyer not long ago. The landsman has taken it upon himself to try a flyer for treason. Can you believe that?
Yes, Maris said. It's true.
Ah, said Col.
He looked surprised and distracted from his speech.
Well, could I have some tea?
I'll get it, said Evan.
Go on, said Maris. What other rumours?
You may know more than I. What of this arrest?
I hardly believed it. How much do you know?
Maris hesitated. We were warned not to speak of it.
Cole made an impatient thrumming noise with his guitar. I'm your brother, damn it. Singer or no, I can keep silent. Out with it.
So Maris told him about their summons to the keep and what they'd learned there.
That would explain a lot, he said when she had finished.
Oh, I'd heard of it anyway. People talk, even Landsguard, and the landsman's secrets aren't as well kept as he imagines. But I never dreamt it was true. No wonder so many flyers have been about.
Let the landsman try to keep flyers in or out, he grinned.
The other rumours? Maris prompted.
Yes, Cole said. Well, did you know that Val Onewing has been on Theos?
Val? Here?
He's left again now. They told me he arrived only a few days ago, looking very worn, as from a long flight. He wasn't alone, either. 5 or 6 others were with him. Flyers, all of them.
Did you hear any names?
Only Val's. He's notorious. But some of the others were described to me. A stocky southern woman with white hair, a huge man with a black beard and a Scylla-tooth necklace, several westerners, including 2 enough alike to be brothers.
Damon and Athan, Maris said. I'm not sure of the others.
Evan returned with cups of steaming tea and a platter of thick-sliced bread.
I am, he said, of one at least. The man with the necklace is Catan of Lomeran. He comes to Theos frequently.
Of course, Maris said. Catan, a leader among Eastern Onewings.
Was there more? Evan asked.
Cole set aside his guitar and blew on his tea to cool it.
I was told that Val came representing the Flyers to try to talk the landsman into releasing this woman he's imprisoned, this Tia.
A bluff, Maris said.
Val doesn't represent the Flyers. All those you named are Onewings. The old families, the traditionalists, still hate Val. They'd never let him speak for them.
Yes, I heard that too, Cole said.
Anyway, it was claimed that Val offered to summon a Flyers' court to judge Tia. He was willing enough to let the landsman keep Tia imprisoned until...
Maris nodded impatiently. Yes, yes, but what did the landsman say?
Cole shrugged. Some say he was very cool, some say he and Val Onewing quarrelled loudly. In any case, he insisted that the flyer would be tried in the landsman's own court, and that he would do the judging and sentencing himself. The word on the streets is that the verdict has already been reached.
So poor Rennie wasn't enough for him, Evan murmured. The landsman must have another death to avenge his pride.
What did Val say to that? Maris asked. Col sipped his tea.
I gather Val left after his meeting with the landsman. Some say the One-Wings are going to raid the keep and rescue Tia. There's talk of a Flyer's council, too, summoned by Val, to invoke a sanction against Deos and shun it.
No wonder the people are frightened, Evan said.
Flyers should be frightened, too, Col said. Feeling among the locals is running against them.
In a tavern near the north side cliffs, I overheard a conversation about how the Flyers have always secretly ruled Windhaven, deciding the fate of islands and of individuals by the messages they bear and the lies they tell.
That's absurd, Mary said, shocked. How can they believe that?
The point is that they do, Col replied. I am a Flyer's son. Never a Flyer, although I was raised to be. I understand the traditions of the Flyers, the bonds that link them, the feeling they have of being a society apart from all others. But I also know the people the Flyers call landbound, as if they were all the same, joined together in one large family like the Flyers are.
He set down his mug of tea and again picked up his guitar, as if holding it gave him some special eloquence.
You know how scornful the Flyers can be of landbound, Maris, he said. I don't think you realize how resentful the landbound can be of the Flyers.
I have landbound friends, Maris said, and the One-Wings all began as landbound.
Col sighed. Yes, there are those who worship the Flyers. Lodgemen who devote their lives to caring for them, children who want to touch a Flyer's wings, hangers-on who get a special thrill and a special status from coaxing a Flyer into bed. But there are others as well. The landbound who resent Flyers seldom seek them out as friends, Maris.
I know there are problems. I haven't forgotten the hostility we faced when Val got his wings, the threats, the beating, the coolness. But surely things are changing, now that the society of Flyers is no longer limited by birth.
Col shook his head. It's grown worse, he said. In the old days, when it was a matter of birth, a lot of people felt Flyers were special. In many of the southern islands, the Flyers are priests, a special caste, blessed by their sky god. In Artelia, they are princes. Just as the landsmen of Easton inherited their offices from their parents, so did the Flyers inherit their wings. But no one now could make the mistake of thinking Flyers divinely chosen. Suddenly there are new questions. How did this grubby farm child I grew up with suddenly become so high and mighty? What sets this former neighbour apart and gives him the freedom, power and wealth of a Flyer? These One-Wings aren't as aloof as the traditional Flyers. They lord over their old companions sometimes, or meddle in local affairs. They don't withdraw entirely from island politics. They still have local interests. It makes for bad feelings.
20 years ago, no landsman would have dared seize a Flyer, said Evan thoughtfully. But 20 years ago, would any Flyer have dared to misrepresent a message?
Of course not, said Maris.
I wonder, though, how many will believe that, Col added. Now that it's happened, it's clear that it might have happened before. Those farmers I overheard were convinced that the Flyers have been manipulating messages all along. From what I heard, the landsman of Deos is becoming rather a hero for being the one to flush out the truth.
A hero? Evan was disgusted. It can't all change because of one well-meaning lie, Maris said stubbornly.
No, said Col. It's been changing all along. And it's all your fault.
Me? I've nothing to do with this.
No? Col grinned at her. Think again.
Barion used to tell me a story, Big Sister. About how he and you floated in a boat together, waiting to steal back your wings from Corm, so that you could call your council. Do you remember?
Of course I remember.
Well, he said you floated there quite a while, waiting for Corm to leave his house, and all that waiting gave Barion a chance to think over what you and he were doing. At one point, he said, he sat cleaning his nails with his dagger, and it occurred to him that maybe the best thing he could do was to use that dagger on you. It would have saved Windhaven a lot of chaos, he said, because if you won, there were going to be more changes than you imagined,
and several generations' worth of pain. Barion thought the world of you, Maris, but he also thought you were naive. You can't change one note in the middle of a song, he told me. Once you make the first change, others have to follow, until you've redone the whole song. Everything relates, you see. So why did he help me?
Barion was always a troublemaker, Col said. I guess he wanted to redo the whole song, make something better out of it.
His stepbrother grinned wickedly.
Besides, he added, he never liked Corm.
After a week without news, Col decided to return to Port Theos to hear what he could. The docks and taverns where he plied his trade were always a rich source of news. Maybe I'll even visit the landsman's keep, he said jauntily. I've been making up a song about our landsman here, and I'd love to see his face when he hears it.
Don't you dare, Col, Maris said.
He grinned. I'm not mad yet, big sister, but if the landsman likes good singing, a visit might be worthwhile. I might learn something.
Just keep Barry safe for me. 2 days later, a wine cellar brought Evan a patient, a huge, shaggy black dog, one of two such monstrous hounds that pulled his wooden cart from village to village. A hooded torturer had mauled the animal, and now it lay among the wineskins, crusted with blood and filth. Evan could do nothing to save the beast, but for his efforts he was offered a skin of sour red wine.
"They tried that traitor flyer," the wine seller reported as they drank together by the fire. "She's to hang."
"When?" Maris asked.
"Who's to say? Flyers are everywhere, and the landsman's afraid of them, I think. She's locked up now in his keep. Think he's waiting to see what those flyers do. If it was me, I'd kill her and have done with it. But I wasn't born landsman."
Maris stood in the doorway when he departed, watching the man and the surviving dog straining together in the traces. Evan came up behind her and put his arms around her. "How do you feel?"
"Confused," Maris said without turning, "and afraid. Your landsman has challenged the flyers directly. Do you realize how serious that is, Evan? They have to do something. They can't let this pass." She touched his hand.
"I wonder what they're saying on the Eyrie tonight. I know I can't let myself be drawn into flyers' affairs, but it's hard. They are your friends," Evan said. "Your concern is natural."
"My concern will bring me more pain," Maris said.
"Still..."
She shook her head and turned to face him, still within the circle of his arms. "It makes me realize how small my own problems are," she said. "I wouldn't want to trade places with Tia tonight, though she's still a flyer and I'm not."
"Good," Evan said.
He kissed her lightly. "For it's you I want here by my side, not Tia."
Maris smiled at him, and together they went inside.
They came in the middle of the night. Four strangers dressed as fisherfolk in heavy boots and sweaters and dark caps trimmed with sea-cat fur, and they brought the strong salt smell of the sea with them. Three of them wore long bone knives and had eyes the colour of ice on a winter lake. The fourth one spoke.
"You don't remember me," he said, "but we've met before, Maris. I'm Arilan of the Broken Ring."
Maris studied him, remembering a pretty youth she'd met once or twice. Beneath 3 days' growth of blonde beard, his face was unrecognizable, but his piercing blue eyes seemed familiar. "I believe you are," she said. "You're a long way from home, Flyer. Where are your wings? And your manners?"
Arilan smiled a humorless smile. "My manners? Forgive my rudeness, but I come in haste and at considerable risk. We made the crossing from Thrinel to see you, and the seas were choppy and dangerous for a boat as small as ours. When this old man tried to send us away, I ran out of patience."
"If you call Evan an old man again, I'm going to run out of patience," Maris said coldly. "Why are you here? Why didn't you fly in?
My wings are safe on Thrinel. It was thought best to send someone to you in secret, someone whose face is not known on Deos. Being from the Embers, and new among the Flyers, I was chosen. My parents were fisherfolk, and I was raised to the life. He removed his cap, shook out his fine blonde hair. "May we sit?" he asked. "We have important business to discuss."
"Evan?" Maris asked.
"Sit," Evan said. "I'll make tea."
"Ah," Arilan smiled. "That would be most welcome. The seas are cold. I'm sorry if I spoke too harshly. These are hard times."
"Yes," Evan agreed. He went outside to draw water for the kettle.
"Why are you here?" Maris asked when Arilan and his three silent companions were seated. "What's all this about?"
"I was sent to bring you out of here. You can hardly take ship from Port Deos, you know. You'd not be permitted to leave. We have a small fishing boat hidden not far from here. It will be safe. If the Landsguard sees us, we're simply fisherfolk from Thrinel, blown northeast by a storm."
"My escape seems well planned," Maris said. "A pity no one thought to consult me about it." She gazed at the disguised flyer, frowning.
"Whose idea was this? Who sent you?"
"Val One Wing."
Maris smiled.
"Of course. Who else?
But why does Val want me taken from Deos?"
"For your own safety," Arilan said. "As an ex-flyer living here, helpless, your life might be in danger."
"I'm no threat to the landsman," Maris said. "He'd have no cause to—"
The young flyer shook his head vehemently. "Not the landsman. The people.
Don't you know what's going on?"
"It seems I don't," Maris said. "Perhaps you should tell me."
"News of Tia's arrest has spread all over Windhaven, even to Artelia and the Embers. Many of the landbound have begun muttering their distrust of flyers, even the landsmen."
He flushed.
"The landsman of the Broken Ring summoned me as soon as she heard, and demanded to know if I had ever lied or twisted a message. I was forced to swear my loyalty to her. Even as she questioned me, it was obvious she doubted my word. And she threatened me. She threatened me with imprisonment. As if she could, as if she had the right."
He broke off and seemed physically to swallow his anger.
"I am a One Wing, of course," he resumed. "All of us are suspect now, but it is worst for the One Wings. Sweener of Deeth was set upon by thugs and beaten after speaking in Tia's defense in a tavern argument. Others have been called names, shunned, even spat upon in eastern towns. Jem, who is as traditional as can be, was hit with a rock yesterday on train, and Captain's house on the Lomeron was fired while he was away."
"I had no idea it was so bad," said Maris.
"Yes," said Arilan, "and growing worse. The fever burns hottest of all here on Deos. Val thinks the mob will come for you soon, so we are sent to bring you to safety."
Evan had returned and was preparing the tea.
"Maybe you should go," he said to Maris, concern in his voice. "I hate to think of you in danger. In time this will blow over and you can return, or I could come to you."
Maris shook her head.
"I don't think I'm in any danger. Perhaps if I paraded up and down the streets of Port Deos crying out my concern for Tia, but here in the woods I'm a harmless old ex-flyer who has done nothing to rouse anyone's anger."
"Mobs aren't reasonable," Arilan said. "You don't understand. You must come with us for your safety."
"How kind of Val to be so concerned with my safety," Maris said, staring at Arilan. "And how unusual. At a time like this, Val must have a lot on his mind. I really can't imagine him taking the time and effort to devise an elaborate scheme to rescue poor old Maris, who hardly needs rescuing. If Val truly sent you to rescue me, it must be because he's thought of some way I can be of use to him."
Arilan was plainly startled.
"You're mistaken. He's very much concerned for your safety.
And what else is he concerned with?
You might as well tell me what you really want with me."
Arilan smiled ruefully.
"Val said you'd see through the story," he said. He sounded admiring. I would have told you anyway, once we had you safely away from here. Val has called a Flyers' Council.
Maris nodded. Where?
On South Arran. It's close, but removed from the immediate hostilities, and Val has friends there. It'll take a month or more for the Flyers to assemble, but we have time. The Landsman is afraid, and he'll be too cautious to move until he sees what comes of the Council.
What does Val intend?
What else? He will ask for a sanction against Deos to be in effect until Tia is freed. No Flyer will land here or on any other island that trades with Deos. This rock will be isolated from the world. The Landsman will give in or be destroyed.
If Val has his way. The One Wings are still a minority, and Tia is no innocent victim, Maris pointed out.
Tia is a Flyer, Arilan said, gratefully taking the mug of tea Evan handed him. Val is counting on Flyer loyalty. One Wing or no, she is a Flyer, and we can't abandon her.
I wonder, said Maris.
Oh, there will be a fight, of course. We suspect Corm and some others may try to use this incident to discredit all One Wings and close the academies.
He smiled over the rim of his mug.
You haven't helped, you know. Val said you picked the worst possible time to fall.
I wasn't given any choice, Maris said. But you still haven't said why you came for me.
Val wants you to preside.
What?
It's traditional to have a retired Flyer conduct the council, you know that. Val thinks that you would be the best choice. You're widely known and widely respected among One Wings and Flyerborn both, and we'd have no trouble getting you accepted. Any other One Wing will be rejected. And we need someone we can count on, not some crusty old relic who wants everything like it used to be. Val thinks it can make a big difference.
It can, said Maris, remembering the pivotal role that Jamis the Senior had played in the council that Corm had called.
But Val will have to find someone else. I'm through with flying and with Flyer councils. I want to be left in peace. There can be no peace until we have won.
I'm not a stone on Val's Geechee board, and the sooner he learns that, the better.
Val knows what it would cost me to do as he asks. How dare he ask? He sent you to trick me, to lie to me with talk of safety, because he knew I would refuse. I can't bear to see one Flyer. Do you think I want to be with a thousand of them, watching them play in the sky and listening to them trade stories, and finally stand alone, an old cripple, and watch them fly away and leave me? Do you think I'd like that?
Maris realized she'd been shouting at him. Her pain was a knot in her stomach.
Arilan's voice was sullen. I scarcely know you. How could you expect me to know how you felt? I'm sorry. I'm sure Val is sorry, too. But it can't be helped. This is more important than your feelings. Everything depends on this council, and Val wants you there.
Tell Val that I am sorry, Maris said quietly. Tell him I wish him luck, but I will not go. I'm old and tired, and I want to be left alone.
Arilan stood up. His eyes were very cold.
I told Val I would not fail him, he said. There are four of us against you.
He made a small gesture, and the woman on his right slid her knife from its sheath. She grinned, and Maris saw that her teeth were made of wood. The man behind her rose, and he too held a knife in his hand.
Get out, said Evan. He was standing near the door to his workroom, and in his hands was the bow he used for hunting, an arrow notched and ready.
You could only take one of us with that, said the woman with the wooden teeth, if you were lucky, and you wouldn't have time to reach for another arrow, old man.
True, said Evan, but the point of this arrow is smeared with blue tick venom, so one of you will die.
Put your knives away, Arilan said. Please, put that down. No one need die.
He looked at Maris.
Maris said, Did you really think you could force me into presiding over the council?
She made a disgusted sound.
You might tell Val that if his strategy is as good as yours, the One Wings are finished.
Arilan glanced at his companions.
Leave us, he said. Wait outside.
Reluctantly, the three shambled to the door.
No more threats, Arilan said. I'm sorry, Maris. Maybe you can understand how desperate I feel. We need you.
You need the flyer I was, perhaps, but she died in a fall.
Leave me alone. I'm just an old woman, a healer's apprentice, and that's all I aspire to be. Don't hurt me any more by dragging me into the world.
Contempt was plain on Arilan's face.
To think that they still sing of a coward like you, he said.
When he had gone, Maris turned to Evan. She was trembling, and her head felt light and dizzy. The healer lowered the great bow he held and set it aside. He was frowning.
Dead? He asked bitterly. All this time have you been dead? I thought you were learning how to live again, but all this time you've seen my bed as your grave.
Oh, Evan, no, she said dismayed, wanting comfort and not still more approach.
It was your own word, he said. Do you still believe that your life ended with your fall?
His face twisted with pain and anger.
I won't love a corpse.
Oh, Evan. She sat down abruptly, feeling that her legs could no longer hold her up. I didn't mean... I meant only that I'm dead to the flyers, or they are dead to me. That part of my life is finished.
I don't think it's that easy, Evan said. If you try to kill a part of yourself, you risk killing everything. It's like what your brother said, rather what Barion said, about trying to change just one note in a song.
I value our life together, Evan, Maris said. Please believe me. It's just that Arilan, this damn council of Val's, brought it all back to mind. I was reminded of everything I've lost. It made the pain come back.
It made you feel sorry for yourself, Evan said.
Maris felt a flash of annoyance. Couldn't he understand? Could a landbound ever understand what she had lost?
Yes, she said, her voice cold. It made me feel sorry for myself. Don't I have that right? The time for self-pity is long past. You have to come to terms with what you are, Maris.
I will. I am. I was learning to forget. But to be drawn into this thing, this flyer's dispute, would ruin everything. It would drive me mad. Can't you see that?
I see a woman denying everything she has been, Evan said.
He might have said more, but a sound made them both look around, and they saw Barry standing in the doorway, looking a little frightened. Evan's face softened, and he went to her and lifted her in a great bear hug.
We had some visitors, he said.
He kissed her.
Since we're all up, shall I make breakfast? Maris asked.
Barry grinned and nodded. Evan's face was unreadable. Maris turned away and set to work, determined to forget.